paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
In studio today with me,
Matt Dixon.
And boy, have we got a show, but I can't resist. The hits keep coming, right? We just keep hearing about all kinds of stuff going on in our government these days. And so more and more things seem to be kind of under scrutiny and under fire. So what did we lose today? I've heard that the Federal Housing Administration and the loan underwriting, or not underwriting, the insurance program that they do for mortgage insurance, something like half the employees are going to be axed on that one.
Yeah.
I just heard that. The really big one, I think, is the possibility of Social Security fraud. I mean, we were talking about that just beforehand. But
yeah, I believe the director of the whole Social Security Department decided they were going to step down once they found out that they were going to be completely audited. And it was like, yeah, see you later.
This falls under the, it doesn't mean you're guilty, but it doesn't look good.
No.
Right? When stuff like that happens, you're like, wait a second. So you just bounced?
Mm-hmm.
So, golly. You know, I've had this conversation with many people where it's hard to know which information is valid any longer. You know, what's
right.
like what's real and what is kind of, I'll call it newswashed, right? The idea that, you know, you take one part and you magnify it up and make it really bad, and then you realize, like, it'd be the story that says, fictional example, but right, it says mother like sets house on fire or something like that, and you realize it's like, well, in the middle of doing a whole bunch of stuff, there was a fire that started because of something that a mother did, and it was fairly typical and not really her fault per se, but it turned into a house fire, right? So because she lit a candle that the dog knocked over when she wasn't in the room, and before you know it, she's blamed for burning her house down. And you're like, well, technically, I suppose. But boy, that was a tough frame up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just never know. Is that what we're looking at here? Or is it really? But when you start finding, when you hear B in front of billions, I'm like, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Billions in fraud is a lot of fraud.
Yeah. And here's the thing that this one actually bothers me, right? It bothers me when people go, well, yeah, but if you look at it compared to the whole government budget. and I go, so this to me is sort of a false equivalent, right?
Yeah, you can't have billions as a rounding error in government.
Well, it is in a budget of their scale when you're talking trillions, but I agree with you, right?
Yeah.
The issue is, but each taxpayer, that represents lots of money to each taxpayer.
Right.
And the fact that it seems to be everywhere right now is a problem.
It'll be interesting to see where everything goes with that. Like, where was the fraud? Where did the money go? Like, do we end up getting an answer as to, like, where did all that taxpayer money end up?
Yeah. Well, you know, the attitude of it is really fascinating to me. I think you kind of, on the last show we did, you talked a little bit about this. I talked a little bit about this, that there seems to be kind of two attitudes that they're not opposite each other, but it's really interesting how they approach problem solving. You know, one is the government needs to be accountable to the taxpayer. And so there's a fiduciary obligation that goes with how we spend.
Right.
And the other is we're supposed to provide services. And we're going to do that however we can, right? And we're going to use the process that we have in front of us. And the issue is that one is like, well, where is there ever an incentive to save money? Like, when is the government the low bidder? And the answer, as far as I can tell, is never.
Right, that's an issue.
That's an issue because, and by the way, this is going to be relevant today because we're talking to, you know, today that the topic of the day is talking about some of the things that people, so like this is this show, if you are somewhere between 2 and 5 years from retirement, this show is definitely for you. If you've recently transitioned to retirement, this show is still for you. If you're well into retirement and you're kicking butt, then this show is for you so you can tell the people that are coming, right? And if you got more time than that, well, you know, you're ahead of the power curve. But it really is for if you're kind of in that zone where you're starting to get serious about planning for retirement, what do you forget? But one of the things in that list is very applicable, which is like where it's the tax relevancy, right? Mm-hmm. And so it bothers me that when we can't track where the money has gone, right? We're trying to audit our government, and you go like, wait, you don't know? To the how many zeros?
Yeah. I mean, how can you be effective in any way if you can't even know and track your own spending habits as a government? It's like,
well, and it seems like one of the rationales that we get for why it's so expensive for the government to do something versus the private sector is because there's this burden of accounting, right? Because mm-hmm. everything is supposed to be tracked to be accountable to the taxpayer. That's the justification in the first place of why you just got to like hit the mic mute button and just let it out, man.
Nope. Good. I'm struggling with that behind the scenes. I'm struggling with that cough that's going around.
Oh my God. Oh my goodness. Was joking that our office sounded like we were training sea lions today.
Yeah.
Everywhere you go, we're all coughing. And I'm the healthy one, just so everybody's aware. And I'm still coughing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, are you guys going to make it?
Don't make an appointment. Just show up at the office. We'll give you free financial advice and a free cough.
Yeah, exactly. So at this point, Zoom appointments look great.
They really do.
Yeah, it is just wild. But and it's just going around this area of the country in a big way. So, summer, we're ready for you.
Yes.
Bring it on. Okay, well, look, I want to pivot here. So we know that the government's all over the board with spending, and we don't get that luxury, especially going into retirement. So today we're going to talk about some of the things that folks most frequently miss going into retirement, like some of the mistakes that we most often see.
Okay. Right?
And so I've got a list of them here in front of me, right? And you could tell because I can make a sound for the microphone. Yeah,
the cheat
very
sheet.
Important. Yeah. But Matt, when you think about the number of people that we talk to on a regular basis, and we think about some of the things that when I say unforced errors, right? This makes it sound like we're teasing people. We're not. Mm-hmm. I think it's things that folks genuinely overlook or oversimplify in their mind in such a way that it's just like, oh, yeah. And then you go like, oh, wait a minute. I didn't fully think about that. And then it kind of sneaks up on them.
Yeah.
What are some examples of things that sort of feels or sounds like?
I mean, one of the ones you get, I think, a lot is just this natural assumption that everything's just going to magically be fine, right? Like, people come in and they're like, I'm going to be fine, right? And I think in the back of their mind, deep down, they're like, I don't know that that's actually the case. And they're just like, well, am I good or am I not?
Yeah.
And they'll tell you, it'll work out, but there's no, like, logic or numbers behind that. And so I think one of the big pieces is, like, it's taking a step back and saying, okay, you know, like, what are all the things? Mm-hmm. And then, like, what type of lifestyle are you living now? Because what a lot of people don't realize is they can actually spend more in retirement than what they thought.
I know. This is a fun joke, but it's so real. What's it like when every day becomes Saturday? You know? I mean, every day is Saturday.
Right.
You know, you got a lot more discretion over your
That's
time now.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, if you're not working, you're going and doing more things, and going and doing more things costs money.
Right.
And for a lot of people, you know, they're actually traditionally, you know, pretty frugal, and they're really good at delaying gratification and saving money. And then they get to retirement and they think that that has to continue. And then a lot of the times it's like, hey, you know, you got a couple million dollars in your retirement accounts and, you know, you've done well, you've diversified. It's okay to start spending some money and going and doing some things.
And
it's not fun
is,
to have the other conversation where it's like, you're spending $175,000 a year right now and you didn't do a great job saving. It's like, well, you know, when you retire, yeah, you're probably going to have to pull back on your spending and go to maybe $125,000.
Here's the wild part to me is how many people, their definition of retirement's all over the board, right? They say, like, oh, we're going to go to retire. And so when I use the term retire, I think of it as exiting the workforce for gainful employment, right? Like, I'm no longer going to work and getting a paycheck. That's retirement.
Yeah.
Okay. What surprises me is the folks that are saying things like, well, I'm going to collect my Social Security. That's retirement, right? I'm going to start collecting Social Security. Are you going to stop working? Well, no, I can't afford to do that, but I'm going to retire. And like, you and I have a different definition of retirement.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so when you cease working for gainful employment, notice I didn't say cease working.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, a lot of people, when they're retired, they go do something that pays hardly anything compared to what they used to do, but it's fun for them. And so they go do it just because they enjoy people and interaction.
Yeah. A fun one for me is when you go to work to collect a paycheck instead of a paycheck, right?
Yeah.
And so sometimes it means you're going to go volunteer. You're going to do something that just means something to you, but you're not worried about getting paid for your time to do it. You're no longer trading your time for money. You're trading your time for some other kind of value that it brings you.
Right.
And so I think that's the position that I try to get all of my clients into is, hey, you don't have to stop working. Like, if you love your job and it's making you an income and you don't have to stop, great, then don't, right? It actually makes planning a lot easier because you're like, well, you still have gainful employment. So your ability to earn an income is still the primary thing that's sustaining you.
Right.
Right? That's actually easier than the idea of, well, we have to build up a nest egg that's capable of sustaining you because you're not going to be trading your time for money anymore.
Right.
Right. So it's just kind of an interesting animal on this one. And, you know, there's some really super obvious math. Mm-hmm. It's so obvious that people like kind of miss it when it comes to retirement and like why the spending goes up versus why you why it doesn't go up. Right. But anyway, I'm realizing one. I gotta make sure our headphones are on. I'm gonna grab a break, right?
Okay.
Because I wanna share the math with everybody, but we'll do it after the break because our segments run a little bit long. So, the easy math part, and then a few more things. If you're getting ready for retirement, right? The first, what did we just talk about? That you can overspend easily, right? Mm-hmm. And then we're gonna talk about a couple ways to fix it, and then a couple other things that people don't look at as well. Stick around, we'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dix.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. If you are listening to us live, you know where we're at. But if you are listening to us later, it's because you found our podcast. If you are joining us late, you too can find said podcast. Go to littlejohnfs.com and you can find it under the Educate tab, or you can subscribe at all your favorite places to get podcasts. So, Matt, we talked about how a lot of folks go into retirement. We're talking today about what are folks that are nearing retirement, what are some of the things that they overlook?
Yeah.
And the first one is, what happens when every day is Saturday?
Well, I think another big piece is people don't really tend to think about inflation a whole lot because they're like, oh, I can retire today. Like, Social Security and my pension, I've got $70,000 coming in a year, and my cost of living is $65,000, so we're good. Look at that $5,000 buffer window, and it's like, but are you accounting for the fact that like things continue to get more expensive? And that's really, I think, where, as an advisor, you know, all that planning software that we pay so much money to have can really come in handy. It's like, you know, maybe the common person doesn't have access to the same, you know, I mean, they might, but it's a lot of money. Like, look at our software costs. We pay so much.
Well, you know, I don't think folks necessarily understand the benefits of having robust tools because
yeah.
anybody, I really do think there are a lot of places you can go do a time value calculation of money, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to say, okay, well, let me see what the inflation adjusted cost of something's going to be over time, and you can punch some stuff in. If you know how to work like, you know, a basic, you know, Hewlett-Packard business calculator, you figure that out, right? So time value money calculations, annuity calculations, those are all things that somebody could do. But where it gets complicated is when you start layering things, right? Mm-hmm. So you have multiple calculations going on simultaneously, and then you have graded tax curve, right? So, oh, well, this is a progressive tax scale against a moving target now. And
right.
so you have the math gets harder when you start right. layering those things in.
Because your RMDs are going up and maybe mm-hmm. your Social Security is getting inflation adjusted, and you start compounding all of that, and it's like, well, maybe you just jumped, like you said, into another tax bracket.
Yeah. Well, and here's, I promised everybody I'd talk a little bit about the simple math, right? Simple math, you don't even really have to do the math if you just understand the simple concept. So in theory, we all have a finite lifespan, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe you're a vampire or something and we don't know that. So like you're going to live forever, but most of us don't. Right. And so if that's the case, then your money only has to last you so long. Well, the longer you work, the less time your nest egg has to sustain you.
Right.
So that's why delaying retirement actually makes it easier to plan for retirement, because you keep working longer. The nest egg has to do less heavy lifting to sustain you, right?
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. And so it also makes, it means you have to save less, right? So that's the funny part. Okay, well, you get it, it's a double-edged sword, right? I have to earn less on my nest egg in order to sustain myself, and I need less of it because I have less time. Okay, so that's the silly secret math that's not so secret, right? When I promised you guys it was going to be pretty obvious, but it's amazing how folks kind of miss that, right? But there are tons of planning opportunities that are missed. Matt, you kind of flirted with one just now. When we talk about tax implications here, you flirted with the idea because you said, hey, well, you don't know about required distributions and things like that. How many people out there do you think don't realize that if they have a retirement plan that is not a Roth retirement plan, that they're going to be required to take money out of it at some point?
Yeah, that's something that a lot of people overlook.
Yeah. So here's a weird one that you don't necessarily think about. That if you're going to be required to take money out, you've been saving it for a long time. And especially if there's mm-hmm. a husband and wife pair here, and you've got one person with a particularly large account and the other with a smaller account.
Yeah.
Is that that large account will have a larger forced distribution amount.
Yeah, I actually, you know, I've talked with a couple people recently where that's been an issue, you know, and it's like you start digging into it and it's like, well, you've got a good retirement savings, but it's all in stuff that's going to be taxed when mm-hmm. you retire, and it's going to require you to start taking that out at age 73. And so the light bulb turns on for people when they realize, wow, like if I want to pull $150,000 out and go buy this little vacation rental or something, even though I have a couple million dollars or something in the retirement account, if I pull that $150,000
yeah,
out,
sure,
I
just my taxes way up.
Yeah, I lost 30-40% of it to taxes. And it's like, well, that sucks. So then you got to pull more out in order to get what you actually need.
Yeah.
And then it's like, it can just compound and create a bigger and bigger
issue.
Try this
one on, right? So I did the math on this, and this is really swag math. I haven't like checked it, but at one point it was like, what's the point at which you should probably stop putting money into a retirement plan? Right? And that just baffles people because you're like, wait, you should stop putting money into retirement plans? Well, probably if the following happens, right? Somewhere in the neighborhood of $3.5 million in retirement in today's dollars,
mm-hmm.
your required distributions will put you into the highest tax bracket.
Right.
And so the idea of putting money into a retirement plan because it's going to lower your tax rate today doesn't lower your tax rate on the back end. It puts you into the highest tax bracket. So the deferral means a lot less if you're not improving your tax position later.
Yeah.
You know, so there is a threshold at which I have contributed so much into retirement plans that I may have diminishing marginal return for the value of retirement. Now, the tax deferral is great, but you're going to pay the taxes one way or the other. And here's the real catch. It can be terribly expensive for heirs as a way to inherit money. when you could have put it into a more tax-effective thing if your goal is not to spend it, but to move it on to the next generation.
I don't know about you, David, but a lot of people I talk to that have a 401k, they've just, you know, they've set it up, they've been contributing. But when we talk, you know, we end up finding out there was a Roth 401k option there that they just never knew about. And so they spent years contributing to a traditional 401k, even though that Roth 401k was available to them, and they just didn't take advantage of it.
Right.
That's a common one.
It is. And so here's the question that it's not a hard and fast answer, but it's actually a pretty simple one. And I'm going to answer this, but keep in mind, I'm not giving you advice when I answer this. We're talking math here, not advice. Okay. So when do you choose a Roth IRA versus a traditional IRA? What's the math rationale for one over the other?
I mean, I think the easiest way to look at that is just to try and ask yourself the hard question of, and this is a hard question, what am I paying in taxes now versus what am I going to be paying in taxes in the future? Because if your future self is going to have a pretty big nest egg and you're going to be making a lot of money, it might be better to just go ahead and pay the higher tax rate now, or the higher amount of taxes at a lower rate now. And then in the future, you save yourself the headache of having to deal with being in a higher tax bracket.
Correct. Because largely speaking, you pay the taxes on the way in or you pay them on the way out. And so the whole idea would be if you can save money today because you're in a high tax bracket while you're earning, and then you can defer out into the future at a lower tax bracket, that's the benefit, right? Now, Roth IRAs, I would tell everybody, if taxes weren't an issue at all, in terms of required distributions and future tax rates, right? If your future tax rate and your present tax rate were going to be the same regardless, then it's, in my mind, really attractive to do Roth IRAs. Like if you've got 5 years to get them going, because Roth IRAs, your distributions are tax-free, the taxes are behind you, so it makes the planning a lot easier. And if you die with them and your heirs end up with them, they don't pay the taxes either.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just a far more attractive, because remember, if you don't pay the taxes on tax deferred stuff and you die, your heirs still have that tax obligation. It doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. Now, your spouse, the nice part is they get to have their lifespan to take money out of a retirement plan if they inherit from the spouse. But if it goes to your kids, the way the rules have changed, they get 10 years to take that money out. And so if you have a big 401k, like, you know, big retirement plan, you got $2 million and they got to take out 10% every year for the next 10 years, if we're just doing simple math, right? That's going to be 200 grand on top of whatever income. That's going to turn into a bunch of taxes.
Yep.
Right? And so one way or the other, you're forcing people into a higher tax bracket.
Right.
Period.
Absolutely.
And so that's the frustration on all of this, is that it just kind of eats you on taxes. So the idea would be to try and, you know, we try to manage those as advisors for folks when we're doing planning. But, you know, at some point, there's diminishing marginal return to pouring money into retirement accounts.
Yeah.
And it's so crazy to say, because most people don't put enough in, right? I mean, that's the bigger problem. It's much more likely that you're not funding enough than you're overfunding. But it is possible to overfund, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yep.
You know,
I've seen it.
And so this is one of those opportunities, if you're questioning whether or not you're on pace or you're potentially overfunding your retirement plan, that is something that we can take a look at, right? So that's where you could potentially, you know, seek out the person that you like and trust. If you're working with an advisor already, go ask them, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to answer that question, then it's a different scenario there. And if you're not working with somebody, hey, you know, we do free consults all the time. So, you know, feel free to give us a shout at 541-375-0898. So anyway, we're running a little bit long here. Let's do this. As we reach the top of the hour here, I know we have to take a break, so why don't we go ahead and do that? There's still a few things that I think folks skip over in retirement, and we're going to talk about those, but after these important messages first. So stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show, where we are helping if you are nearing that retirement window. Maybe you've recently entered the retirement window. This show is kind of geared toward you, right? And we've talked about what are some of the things that people overlook, right? Some of it was controlling spending. Like if you're not operating on a budget and every day is Saturday, it gets easy to spend. So there's an issue. Matt, mm-hmm. I think you brought up the issue of, you know, are people considering that the cost of living is likely to keep rising with
right.
with the inflation?
Yep.
Right? We talked about the way that folks navigate taxes. And I don't think we really completely finished that. We did talk about required distributions being an issue. But, you know, Social Security, there's an interesting one that's totally relevant in the conversation about the current political climate, too, because there's been discussion about whether or not Social Security would stop being taxed federally.
Right. That's kind of what they're pushing for.
Yeah. Which would be really interesting. I would actually be a fan of that, although only provided that the system itself is solvent. Because, you know, there's some other issues at play. And I say that, but somewhere during the whole COVID thing, I don't know about you, Matt, but when we started printing money and just dropping it out of helicopters, mm-hmm. metaphorically.
Yeah.
And when people go, well, Social Security's broke. And I went, how can it be broke? We can print money and give it away.
Right.
How yeah, is Social Security broke? Like, you know, I feel like I'm being gaslit by my own government here.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I keep saying, like, if we can print money and conjure it, how is Social Security going to be broke?
Have you ever looked at, like, what the internal rate of return is for all that money that goes into Social Security, how it gets invested? And then, like,
well, it's,
what really
isn't
is
it the...
Isn't
it the equivalent of a Ponzi scheme right now? It's not even invested. It goes in one door and out the other to the people that are taking it right now.
Oh, I know.
You
isn't
know,
that
so it's
the
just
saddest,
a revolving yeah. door.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the actual return on the amount of money that you funnel into Social Security over a lifetime,
mm-hmm.
you're getting hosed.
Yeah.
Like, you're getting hosed bad.
I wish people, like, fully understood that part. Like, yeah. how much money you actually pay into it versus what really comes out.
Yeah, the vast majority, you just do not, you don't win in Social Security. I remember one of, it's funny, I thought about this. Years ago, there was a guy that used to do the radio show here on this station. His name was Kelly Leonard. Super great dude. I really enjoyed him. He invited me on the show, the first time I'd ever done a radio show, and I came on with him. And there was discussion under the George W. Bush administration about privatizing a portion of Social Security to allow folks to have their accounts invested in the stock market.
Right.
And I thought it was a brilliant idea. Except for, in hindsight, I now look at this and go, well, there's a problem.
Gosh, can you imagine how much extra volume there would be in the markets?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, think
like,
about the price.
That's insane.
It would drive pricing up radically because of so many dollars chasing the same number of shares.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that the market would move as much. Like if institutionally that Social Security block was just maybe buying part of the index,
right.
It's like, well, 75% of the index is owned by your
Social Security funds, right?
So how?
But here was the issue that was brought up. What happens when people go out and invest poorly and lose everything? Then what happens to the social safety net?
It would be, yeah, I mean, I think that the government would, in that instance, in that circumstance, be forced to set up like a metric, and it wouldn't be privatized investing. It would just be like, you know, you get option A, B, or C. A is 75% equities, 25% bonds, and here's the
yeah.
indexes that you hold. Like,
and the
it would
reason
have to be...
it's so tricky is because, and I've said this on the show many times, my biggest gripe about government, Matt, right, is I don't think it should pick what?
Mm-hmm.
Winners and losers.
Right.
Right? And so, yeah, if you could say, well, it's private money, right? Social Security is owed to the taxpayer, so it's their money, except that the government is dictating the parameters of how it's invested.
Right.
And then I'm like, so is it private ownership or not?
The issue is if you let it be invest, or like if you let it be privatized and invested however that person sees fit. I mean, how many people shoot themselves in the foot?
Oh, there's another issue beyond that. Like, who gets the proxy vote for the publicly traded companies now?
Right.
Right? Oh, the government pensions in control? They're the majority shareholder now?
Yeah.
And who gets to vote? Are we going to have the government distribute proxies right, to all the Social Security members? Are they going to, like a mutual fund, own the proxy vote now, and so the government gets proxy control of private enterprise?
I think you just have to wipe the vote out. Like any time that like Social Security run by the government owns those shares, like it's an NA.
Well, and the tricky part about that is,
how do you record it?
Well, but it breaks other parts of the system, right?
Oh, I'm sure it would.
You know, because now you're saying, so essentially we have an equity owner without a voting right?
Mm-hmm.
Then what does that say legally? Like, how does that filter through this? Anyway, we're in the weeds of this thing, right?
Yeah, that one.
But anyway, I just thought it was fascinating because Social Security, whether or not it gets taxed federally, the cool thing in Oregon does not tax Social Security. But Social Security got all kind of weird rules at the federal level about, well, how much can you earn and what years can you earn it and whether or not it, you know, it reduces if you're still working and whether or not you're at full retirement age. And you look, these layers to it.
You look at, like, and who knows? This article could have been complete BS. But I was reading something that said that, like the taxes that come from Social Security make up over 7% of the total tax revenue for the government. And so it's like... And it was somewhere north of 7%. So let's just use 10% as an easy number. Mm-hmm. 1/10 of all tax revenue is coming from Social Security. And you got to think, the high earners are the ones that are floating most of that, right? Of that 10%. So
it doesn't intuitively make sense to me, but carry on with this example.
Well, I just, you know, you start looking at like what taxes are, do people like, in theory, should they like, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, a sales tax. Everyone that buys stuff pays a sales tax, right? And so that's kind of, you know, spread out between everyone. But, you know, for the person that's making $500 a month on Social Security, if you tax that Social Security, that's not really pulling much in. If you go and you ax the whole thing, you know, it's a really big win for the ultra high net worth earners. And so I think there's going to be some division if you pull the stunt.
Well, here's the reason that it makes me kind of raise a flag initially, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's because in theory, Social Security is capped. Medicare is uncapped, so that the Medicare tax kind of goes up unlimited. So I feel like the higher earners are definitely paying more into the Medicare system,
right,
per capita. But Social Security in 2025, the cap for what you were taxed is $176,100.
Oh, they do cap it.
They cap it. So at that point and above, you're not putting more into the system. There are two things that have been proposed to try to sort of make Social Security more solvent. One is to lift that cap, so high earners do pay more. And the other is to then means test Social Security. So they look at your total income sources and then they will reduce or eliminate what you are paid by Social Security. Or maybe they pay you, but they tax it back from you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, oh, well, you get $2,000 in Social Security, but you have to pay $2,000 in Social Security tax because you have too many other income sources. So if you had a big pension and a bunch of dividend income somewhere else, then you could potentially be ineligible for Social Security. And that's largely received pushback because as an entitlement that everybody pays into, folks are saying, well, so let me get this right. You force me to pay into it, and then you don't give it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what I'm hearing here? And so there's a certain amount of, like, constitutionality to that one. Or it's like, that's no longer a progressive tax. That's a straight-up redistribution, not tax anymore.
Right. That's an interesting lens.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, just the complexities of, I mean, Social Security is its own animal in retirement anyway. I think a lot of folks don't necessarily math it out because they look at it and just say, well, I can take it as early as possible and get it my hands on it now, or I should wait until as long as possible so it's high as possible. And I look at this and go, are you calculating the utility value in your plan?
Right.
Right? What do I mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, like, how much is it going to be worth kind of as a whole versus like what are you giving up and what are you getting?
Yeah.
Kind of.
How much will it impact your life?
Yeah.
Because if you wait until 70 to take it, I had clients before. I love this term that they shared: quality time remaining.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not time remaining, quality time remaining. Because if you end up with it's kind of like, you know, great, if you're 75 years old and you inherit $20 million, well, it's nice to have.
Yeah,
but it would have been nicer to have if you were 50.
Right.
Right? Because you'd have had a lot more time to do something with it. So the ability to influence your life and its outcome is radically different depending on when that money is constructively received.
True. True.
So I think that should go into your Social Security factoring there, is, mm-hmm. you know, how does it maximize your kind of lifetime utility?
Yeah.
And P.S., there isn't specific math for that.
No, there's really not.
No, that is a subjective measurement, and so it requires some thoughtfulness.
Yeah. So what's your gut feeling? I mean, we've kind of skated around it. You know, do they need to cut the tax on the Social Security benefits or leave it alone, or do they need to reform it? Like, what angle should they take? And that's kind of a loaded question because it's like, mm-hmm. we don't really know the intricacies behind, you know, how it's necessarily working and the equation behind it. But what's your kind of gut feeling as to how we should approach this?
So, I mean, it's such a great question. We could probably do like a whole show on this, Matt.
Yeah, we really could.
Let me kind of ask a clarifying question from you.
Yeah.
You know, there's the question could be asked through the lens of like, hey, this is the system we've got right now, and this mm-hmm. is the government we've got right now. What do you think's the best solve? And then the other way to ask it is like, hey, if you could design the perfect system, how would you solve it, and how would Social Security fit?
Yeah,
in
I think the second question. It's like,
yeah. Yeah, if I could design the perfect system personally, mm-hmm. I would have the government have a smaller role in our lives.
Yeah.
I think largely speaking, the government it exists to kind of keep bad actors from hurting each other.
Right.
And it exists to regulate and make certain things common, right? Like I talk about infrastructure being commonly regulated. I like the idea that there's certain building codes. I think some of them are kind of silly, but I definitely like, oh, the plugs all work, you know?
Right.
So I can have, there's standardized things that function for all of us. And I love those standardizations. And I love some of the safety protocols that we've put in place. But I think that when the government starts to extend into social engineering, which mm-hmm. again is a gray area there, but there's a threshold at which you're like, that doesn't really seem like government's role anymore. It seems like it's trying to put its thumb on the scale
yeah.
and pick winners and losers again. So I'm like, let's get out of the winner and loser game. And if so, we can do it with a smaller government, in which
yeah.
case Social Security is an actual social safety net, and I think you can fund it without having to tax as much.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's the biggest piece. And I love what I'm seeing right now. How do we kind of gut this thing? Because the reality is, the more hands that the money passes through, the stickier the fingers, right?
Yeah.
And so I think what we really got to do is just continue to, on the mission that we're on of eliminating stuff to where we can automate, like, the IRS, right? It's just like, it just irks me the way that whole system's set up. If we can streamline this thing to the point to where, yeah, the government gets their fair share, but there's not as many people involved in the process, like, you're going to get a lot less corruption. Look at this Social Security fraud that is surfacing, like billions of dollars, potentially.
Billions and it's like, of billions, like hundreds of billions.
We got to streamline this thing to where not as many people are touching the money as it comes through the system, and that requires laying people off and rethinking it. The reality is AI is here, right? Like, computing is getting stronger and stronger. We're going to need less and less people on the government level.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think we definitely need transparency in what's happening.
And we have none.
That's one.
Yep.
And so it seems like the more manual something is, the less transparent. So I would like
yep.
to see more transparency in that process. That does not mean more accounting, right? That doesn't
no.
mean counting more beans. It means being clear what's happening.
Yep.
Right? And so let's make sure that we're talking the same language there. But yeah, I think there just really needs to be, when we say audit, it's like we need to audit the practices that are going on, not just where the money's going, but how it is operating as an organization and whether or not it's doing the best way to operate.
Wouldn't it be amazing if there was so much transparency that you as the taxpayer knew, okay, I put money into the system and I can see, you know, easily, this is kind of where this went, this is where this is going, and like it was...
I have a really simple theory on government and like where the money goes in and how to...
Are you going to pull a Ron Swanson and just say...
I can do what I want. It's my permit.
No. Just eliminate it.
Well, not fully, but tell you what. Let's take our last break. I realize we're running long. We'll do that. When I come back, I have like a really simple test that I think is a great first level for whether or not something is doing its job in government. So I'll share it, but first we got to take this last break. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Oh, God.
Yes, it is.
All right, welcome back to the True Wealth Show, where, once again, during the break, we find inappropriate things that are hilarious.
I don't think it's that inappropriate.
It's not. It's not. Okay, look, I promised our listeners at the break... What's the, like, this simple test to determine whether or not the government should be involved in something?
You have yours. I think I just found mine.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. You can go first.
Can I just directly quote this?
Yes.
This is Ron Swanson. And if you don't know who that is, you have a lot of homework to do after the show by watching Parks and Recreation. Here's the test, David. And it's not really a test. It's just a quote. But it's never too early to learn that the government is a greedy piglet that suckles on a taxpayer's teat until they have sore, chapped nipples. Ron Swanson.
Ron Swanson. There are many great quotes from Ron Swanson, and he's arguably one of the greatest characters ever on television.
True.
No, that is not the test I was thinking of.
If they're sore, the government wasn't involved, and that's how you know.
So here's my general rule of thumb. If more money comes back out of the system than goes into it, then that is a win. So if you put a dollar in, but you take more than a dollar back out, then what you've done is you've socially reinvested. Let me give you a real example, okay? When we put money into educating our kids, we end up saving money because ultimately those kids, if we're effective, will end up paying into the tax system more than we paid to educate them. And it keeps them statistically more likely out of the prison system, which is really expensive to taxpayers. Mm-hmm. So it's a great social reinvestment to put in place education so that the social contract gets maintained. There's high level of ROI. Now, within that, there's the discussion of, well, what goes into the education? Different conversation, right? But whether or not education should occur, that's a really obvious social reinvestment to me where we reap lots of benefits. Fire and police, same thing. Like what we spend on it versus what we gain from it, really high ROI. Okay. Much harder to see the ROI on some programs. And that's why, like, I start to look at these. It's like, well, it's some programs you know, there's no other place to do research and development. So the government is best for the scale of that, but you need to monitor those very closely.
Mm-hmm.
You have found something. I cannot keep you from it.
Well, what you're kind of talking about is the dollar in, dollar out, right? And you've hinted at this so many times over so many years of this show that the government needs to be more privatized.
I think if the private sector can do what the government is doing, it's generally a better idea to let it do.
Because it's generally cheaper.
Provided that there is competition in the private sector.
Well,
Ron Swanson has a quote for you on that one, too.
Great.
I might not be great at radio, but I am good at reading Ron Swanson quotes. So here's another one for you. I think the entire government should be privatized. Chuck E. Cheese could run the parks. Everything operated by tokens. Drop in a token, go on the swing set. Drop in another token, take a walk. Drop in a token, look at a duck. Ron Swanson. The parks would be a lot better.
I hate this idea. Although a bunch of people would own their own parks, and then it would
Can
be
you
like,
imagine?
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything would be maintained.
I can't imagine. And this
you'd
is
kick
why,
out all the homeless people sleeping in your parks because they can't be there.
This is why we had the shirts made up, and they are not without controversy. The concept of ethical capitalism. In which both parties are supposed to come out ahead when the transaction occurs.
Yeah.
Right? That would be an ideal transaction. There's somewhere somebody is like just like throwing stuff at the radio or whatever saying that's ridiculous.
Oh, please do. Yeah. I'm like, see me after class. Like, I'd love to have a debate and please let me film it. We'll go viral real quick.
It would be a really interesting one because like the real capitalist purists, and my question is always, okay, at what point is the monopoly a good idea? Right? Because unrestrained capitalism wants that. Mm-hmm. It wants to get 100% market share and control everything.
Right.
And then it can set the price wherever it wants and be exploitative.
So maybe the government's real job is just prevent monopolies and give you a good military that's going to defend you.
Well,
and
that
then get
goes
out of
back
the way.
To the concept of regulating commerce, right?
Mm-hmm.
Under the broad strokes of commerce. Now, the challenge is that in the broad definition of these things, things can sneak in and become pernicious.
True.
Right. And so that's why it requires a scalpel oftentimes to be very surgical about how you do these things. But I still believe that the government that governs least tends to govern best.
Yes.
Right. And so it doesn't it doesn't mean that we should not pay taxes, by the way. I think it does cost. And the corporate reinvestment that we make is beneficial. But what it means is that the government should not be reckless and wasteful with those dollars. It should treat them as pretty sacred, and we should be trying to get a return on what those tax dollars are paying for.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So we just need to gut a few departments, and hey, we're well on our way.
You know, there's enough bloat that if we cut too much and we have to pack some back on, that's the Elon Musk philosophy, right? Which is, you know, when you're engineering, you should take enough parts away that it stops working, and then you can add them back. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, there's too many. So
I like it.
Yeah. Well, look, as I stare at the clock, I realize we are out of time, Matt. So in the remaining few seconds, how can people reach us if they would like to get a second opinion?
Yeah, go ahead. Go to the website, littlejohnfs.com. You can chat us there, or you can give us a call at 541-375-0898.
All right. Well, you heard it here. We are out of time for now, but thank you, as always, for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 99 FM and 1240 KQEN.